What's up, y'all? Summer's got a different tempo. Everything's a little looser, brighter. One plan turns into another. You hear something, you stay a little longer. Next thing you know, you're somewhere you didn't plan to be. It's those in-between moments. That's where the ideas hit. Conversations stretch out, little memories sneak up on you. And sometimes, it's just about what's in your hand. That color, that chill. The new Tropical Butterfly Refresher from Starbucks. Guava and passion fruit flavors with mango pineapple flavored pearls. Yeah, that feels like summer before you even taste it. Funny how one small stop becomes the best part of the day. Start your summer rhythm with Starbucks. Try the new Tropical Butterfly Refresher from Starbucks.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.
Lots of places can accidentally expose you to identity theft. Doctor's offices, online retailers, insurance companies. The list goes on. Thankfully, LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. LifeLock keeps an eye on your personal information, credit applications, finances, and more. And if they find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, they alert you right away. All through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Even better, alerts are automatically activated the moment you become a LifeLock member. No extra work on your part. Get the alerts that could make all the difference. Don't wait. Join LifeLock now. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart and save up to 30% your first year. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart for 30% off. Terms apply.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.
You're listening to live courtroom coverage of the trial of Karen Reed from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
Each one of those pegs represents 10 feet. You can't place that car where it was in front of Fairview. You just can't. The data doesn't tell you that, but that tells you the movements of that car. Now, as John O'Keefe sadly lays on the ground, abandoned, you're gonna have to ask yourself a question for charge number 3, leaving scene, knowing somebody was injured and then died. You're gonna have to ask yourself, is there evidence that Ms. Reed knew that she had hit him? Don't need to prove it for murder 2. Don't need to prove it for OUI manslaughter. But for the third charge, Commonwealth has to prove beyond a reasonable doubt she knew she hit him. We weren't there, but there was an eyewitness. There was a guide. And that eyewitness tells us that she knew. And that eyewitness is Karen Reed herself. She tells you that she knew. Could we have slide 8, please?
Could I have hit him? Did I hit him?
How could that have been?
I don't know what could have been. It was howling wind. I had YouTube blasting on the stereo. And I thought, did he somehow try to flag me down, which was the reaction I was hoping to garner as I slowly pulled away from the house? Did he come up and maybe trip or bend over to pick up his cell phone and I ran over his foot and then he passed out drunk? I mean, I didn't think I hit him, but could I have clipped him?
When she left Fairview and left John behind, she didn't think he was mortally wounded. But she knew she hit him. She knew she hit him. And so when she made her way back home, not only did she leave debris field all over the front lawn, but she took evidence with her too. Hair, DNA on the taillight, and she drove back to John's house. And she started calling on the way back, 12:33, just a minute and a half later. And then her messages show her anger. You see, this was John's fault. This was John's fault. And her phone calls tell you about the tone and the destruction of that relationship. 53 phone calls that night. 53 phone calls. Not one to 911. Not one to Jen McCabe, please go outside and try to help. Not one to a hospital. Not one to anybody but him. 53 calls. Slide 12, please. Can you play voice number one, please?
John, I fucking hate you!
The calls keep coming. Cell phone temperature, 72 degrees. He's been outside now, not moving, on that cold, hard ground with his cell phone under him. The warmth of his body, the cold ground, 72 degrees. It tells you the story. As this temperature plummets and that cell phone battery is compromised, so is John O'Keefe. And him and his cell phone alone on that yard. 66 degrees at 12:45. It is plummeting. Ian Whippen's taking a phone and putting it in a freezer, not a same analogy. The idea that means that John O'Keefe was in the house, absurd. 66 turns to 61, it's 12:53. 48 unanswered calls from the defendant. He's not in at a party, he's not wrestling with Brian Higgins, he's not in a fight. If he's in a fight, his cell phone would be moving. There'd be healthcare data, there'd be steps. If he got into the house in 20 seconds and his cell phone is found under his body the next day, and how would he get back outside? There would be more steps because his phone is working. The data is the data. There's nothing wrong with it. It's registering everything. The temperature, the movement. He doesn't go in any house, he can't go in any house. His phone never moves again. Voicemail number three, please. Listen to this.
John, I'm the only fucking kid. Nobody knows what the fuck you want, fucking pervert.
Did you hear that? Nobody knows where you are. It is 12:59. John O'Keefe has been on that lawn for about 27 minutes. She hasn't called anybody else, hasn't spoken, has no information. Nobody's called her. You'll see her phone records. And she says, nobody knows where you are? She knows. She knows. Nobody does know where he is. Except her. Except her. Why is she asking nobody knows who you are? She is starting to get panicked because she knows she hit him. Not suggesting she meant to kill him or for him to die, but she knows she hit him and now he's not responding and she's getting nervous and she's getting anxious and she's leaving call after call after call. He's not answering. He's not calling back. He's not even picking up the phone. And we know what's happening at this point. Panic, drunken denial, it's setting in. And so then we see the healthcare data from Ms. Reed's phone. She doesn't move after a little after 1 o'clock. She could be sitting, she could have fallen asleep, but she doesn't move for a while. But she wakes up. She wakes up early the next morning. You can take that down, please. And when she wakes up, she doesn't call Jen McCabe and say, where's John? She doesn't call Brian Higgins, has his number, has been texting with him. Hey, was John at a party with you? Did you see John tonight? She knows exactly where she is and she's frantic. So she wakes up Kaylee, that young girl at the time, and she says she's panicked, she can't understand where she's saying, call Jen McCabe, call Jen McCabe. Why is she calling Jen McCabe? She calls Jen McCabe. You know what she doesn't say when she calls Jen McCabe? When did he leave the house? What happened last night? No. She calls and says, I left him at the waterfall. I left him at the waterfall. See, now it's gone from panicked to self-preservation. I left him at the waterfall, and Jen says, left him at the waterfall? He saw you in front of the house. Click. Hangs up. So then she calls someone that she doesn't know very well. She calls Kerry Roberts. But now she has to pivot, because someone has seen her in the exact spot that John will be found soon. Whether she's the first one there or somebody else, John will be found. Maybe Lucky missed him. It's a snowstorm. You can't see. But someone's going to find him at some point. So she calls Kerry Roberts. It's no longer she left him at the waterfall. She pivots. And she calls, Kerry. John's dead. I think he got hit by a plow. Why do you think she chose those words? Why did she choose those words? Because she knew that there was a collision with a large motor vehicle, and she had to substitute her 6,000-pound Lexus for another big vehicle. I think he got hit by a plow. And so now we have the introduction of Jen McCabe and Kerry Roberts. Phone calls that they probably never, ever wanted. A worse nightmare to get a call like that for what's going to happen, what they're going to see, what they'll never be able to forget. But because the defendant is John O'Keefe's girlfriend, they wake up in the middle of the night in a blizzard. Out of their kindness, their loyalty, their devotion to John O'Keefe. And when she calls them and tells them that she wants them to come out, this soccer mom with a perfectly normal life gets drawn into this whole farce, and she answers that call. She gets out of bed. The spirit and kindness she displays to put herself in that position because someone asked for help. Because that's what good people do. Kerry Roberts didn't know Jen McCabe. They both knew John. They met each other once years before. Kerry Roberts, separately at that time, answers the call, gets out of bed, drives to go help because they have a common denominator, a common bond, John O'Keefe. And so you hear and see at 5:07, the defendant leaves Meadows. She leaves. And Kaylee is behind waiting. And you see her back up, and Judd Welch just showed you all of those demonstrations where you could see the unsettled snow in the back, and after the bump, you can see the pieces missing. No taillight. There's no taillight on the ground, all the white snow. There's no crack. There's no break. It's a nudge. But the taillight has already been broken, because when you look at the video, not one little piece, it's still framed. Little angle with the light, the brakes are on. You take a look, you'll be able to slow it down. You'll see the exact same piece is missing. Because it's back at Fairview. That's why it's missing. It's not there, it's back at Fairview. And then she leaves at 5:07. She gets to Jen McCabe's about, 5:35? 28 minutes. It's about a 10-minute ride. Where does she go in 28 minutes? Where does she go? We don't know. We don't have data for that. But we know when she gets to Jen McCabe's house, she is panicked, frantic, out of her mind, screaming, waking everybody up. Jen McCabe comes down, can't understand her, going out to the car to try to console her. Why is she so frantic? Why can't she speak? Why can't she say a word? Because John went out and had a drink and fell asleep on a couch? Because John would maybe be cheating on her? What is causing this extraordinary duress? Did she stop somewhere on the way by? Did she just see death? Kerry Roberts comes, take charge kind of person. She pulls him behind. She sees the broken taillight in Jen McCabe's driveway, and she decides she's going to commandeer this. We're going to back to Meadows. You're going to follow me. Leave the car. I'll drive. At this point, Jen and Kerry don't know each other. They've only met once. And they go back to Meadows. They obviously don't find John because he's back at 34 Fairview. And then they start their way towards 34 Fairview. They start driving towards 34 Fairview, and they're looking. And you heard from Kerry Roberts, Jen McCabe, they're looking out the window. They can't see a thing. the snow, the blizzard, the weather, the darkness, they can't see anything. And they're driving and driving, and they decide they're going back to 34 Fairview, and this is remarkable. This is remarkable. When they start their way past towards 34 Fairview, they get close. And when they get close, they can see nothing. But the defendant screams, "Stop, let me out." And they look around and they say, "What? Let me out, let me out." She does not see John O'Keefe. She knows where he is. She knows exactly where he is. She knows where to find him. She knows where to expect to find him, because she knows where she left him. She tells us. Slide 13, please.
Charlie and Jen's in the passenger seat. And I described this to everyone. So you probably know this before, but John looked like a buffalo on the prairie. It was just a lawn and a heap that it wasn't a bush or a hydrant or a dog. It was a weird shaped lump at that time in those elements. And I was looking to find him on the side of the road. I was expecting I'd find him.
Thank you. A weird-shaped lump in a blizzard, and you equate that to John O'Keefe? A weird-shaped lump, not like a bush, and that is John O'Keefe? She tells us she knows where she left John O'Keefe. And so they go over to Mr. O'Keefe, Kerry, and Karen, and she's upset, there's no doubt. I am not for a second trying to deprive her of the unrest and the trauma that is happening at this scene. Doesn't change what happened before, but I appreciate the trauma. And they're trying to help him. And guess what happens when they first move him around 603, 604? Ian Whiffen, Data. The cell phone battery gets the cool air, presses on the battery, the cell phone battery drops. Healthcare Data, he has not moved since that 22nd, hasn't moved. They start shaking him. You're gonna see, when you look at the records, that Healthcare Data starts to move. He's been there all night. All night. Nobody else. Her. And so when they try to help him, she says something that is remarkable. She says, "There's a piece of glass stuck in his nose." And she plucks it out. And she says when she plucks it out, blood spurts out. And we'll talk about that in a couple minutes. But remember that. Piece of glass, pulls it out, blood spurts out. That's what she says. As they try to help John, Jen is calling 911. They would like you to believe there's a conspiracy, that the glass that's found in Mr. O'Keefe's body is somehow from inside the Albert House. The glass, well, you will hear in the clips, if we don't play it, you'll have all the clips with you. She talks about the fact that he took her locker. He took the glass. She says it. So the Albert House, they don't need to give glass. He already has the glass. With the straw that's later found on the street, by the way. That's what happens on an impact. Things move. The glass comes with him, lands near his body. Debris field moves past him. Shoe, hat, straw. Jen McKay makes a call to her sister, and they say because it registers 29 seconds, a Cellbrite record is not the same as a call detail record. There is no evidence, there was a conversation, no lights go on, there's no conspiracy. You can call somebody, it can ring, it can go to voicemail. They have no evidence, none, that there's a conversation between Jen McKay, the person who was ripped out of her sleep to come help, and her sister for some grand conspiracy. And so what happens next is traumatic. Kerry Roberts and Jen McKay see their best friend prone, lifeless, frozen, on the ground. And they're living this torment because somebody brought them into this. When they're trying to help John, there is not one suggestion from anybody that John ever went into that house. There's no reason to go into that house because John was never in the house. Not one time does anybody say, What time did he leave? I thought he went in there. Not even a whisper of it, because it never, ever happened. When they find their friend John, he's not 20 feet off the side of the road, like Mr. Rentschler or Mr. Wolf thinks. He's right there by the side of the road, close by the curb. Could we have slide 14, please?
You can see there's Kerry Roberts' vehicle, and then on the left, you can see where they're working. Right off the road, that's not 20 feet. That is a clip, a stubble, and a fall. Remember, when John Key fell, there wasn't snow. It was just the beginning of a dusting. It was the cold, hard ground. Remember what Dr. Isaac Wolf told us about cold, hard ground? Causes this type of injury all the time. All the time. If we could go to slide 16, please. Remember the glass in the nose? The glass in the nose.
See on the bottom left, that's where the Canton Police Department found the glass that he took from the car, from the waterfall. And then exhibit 195, matching glass. On February 3rd, the matching piece of glass was found on the street. The matching piece of glass, the glass that was found with Mr. O'Keefe, was found on the street. He didn't fall back 8-10 feet from the road. It broke, and then it shattered and went to the street. I would suggest to you, it broke at the time of the collision, and he carried the glass with him, leaving the evidence behind, a trail to memorialize what happened to him that night. Remember the straw I asked you to take a look at that picture when we're leaving the waterfall at 12:12, the black straw in the drink? On the street. Collision, glass, nose, straw, back, hits his head.
Can you play the clip on the left, please? 59.
So when John got out of the car at Brian Albert's house, he took my full episode, which is sitting in the cup holder.
169, please.
So John's laying there, left and his right, and I approached John from the left. That's where the street is. And he had a piece of glass, like, perched on his nose, like, just wedged like a splinter would be. And I just pulled it, and as soon as I pulled it, it just gushed blood down his face.
Thank you. 911's called by Jen McCabe. She's not hiding from anybody. She's trying to help. She's bringing attention to the situation. And when 911 comes, we have first responders. These people are heroes. Some of them, you heard from some of them, they were born to help people. That's what their life is about. The detail on all their mechanics of getting to work 2 hours early in the middle of blizzard so that you're there on time so you can help people. These are the core of our community. Mr. Nuttall, this is what he does. He rushes to go help. He's the first person on his knees. He doesn't know this person from anybody, but to him it's another human being. This is his passion. Katie McLaughlin, first responder. This is not just a profession, it's her life. Yes, she knows Caitlin Albert. Do you think she went there that night at a party and set up a murder and came back? And so they tell you what happens at the scene. Some things hard to remember, some things people will never forget. When you're in a traumatic incident, sometimes it's something you'll never, ever, ever forget. And Timothy Nuttall remembers speaking to the defendant. I hit him. Remember, he's on his knees. What happened? I hit him. She is now coming to terms with the moment. Her fear is realized. She hit him, she clipped him, she didn't think he was mortally wounded, she panicked, she can't come to terms with it, so she has to bring people with her to face it, and now she's facing the reality of what she had done. And her emotion is overwhelming. I hit him. She speaks to Miss McLaughlin. I hit him. Not did I hit him, could I hit him, perhaps I hit him, that was earlier. Now, she's recognizing what she did. I hit him. And these people are making it up. Anybody that says anything adverse or inconsistent or inconvenient is a liar. or a perjurer? Are they on a conspiracy? Or is it that these good people who went there for a total stranger to do their duty to help happen to remember that she admitted what she had done? I know that doesn't reconcile with the boogeyman Proctor and the bad government. I know it doesn't reconcile with no DNA on this piece or that piece. I know it doesn't reconcile with everybody setting up the girl. I know that doesn't reconcile. But the reality is, you have independent core people who hear her say, "I hit him. I hit him." And the attempt is to portray everybody as a liar. But you don't have to rely just on these good people, although you should. You should. You don't have to, because we have a guide, and it's Karen Reed. Slide 17.
I always said I hit him, but did I really say this many times as law enforcement's claiming I said it?
Thank you. I know it doesn't fit the theme, the theory, the story, but she tells you herself. She endorses those good people exactly what they had heard. She tells you herself. She hit him. It's undeniable. It's unmistakable. It's inconvenient. But the truth has a way of seeping up to the daylight. It can be oppressed and suppressed and pushed down and covered and twisted, but it rises. It rises. And it is not a coincidence. There's no coincidence that Mr. Nuttall and Ms. McLaughlin hear exactly that. She tells you. And Jen McCabe, when she's sitting next to you or standing next to Ms. McLaughlin, she tells you that she saw or heard the same thing. Remember what happened to her on the stand when she had the audacity to say, "I heard her say it"? What happened to her? This woman who never even wanted to leave her home that day, pulled out into a storm to see her best friend dead. What happened when she had the audacity to say that? And now we know that the defendant herself said the same thing. And the funny thing, the ironic thing is, you will see in a photo when Ms. McLaughlin, the firefighter, was speaking to the defendant, Ms. McCabe was next to her. Ms. McCabe was trying to protect her, trying to shut her up. "Don't talk, you're upset, stop saying crazy things." The villain of the story was trying to help the defendant from incriminating herself. The irony. Could we have slide 9, please?
This is the battery temperature. You're going to have a chance to look at it. If it wasn't so tragic, it is interesting. It is interesting if you like data. The 29-12-13, they're leaving the waterfall, 82 degrees, 12-22, in the car, 77 degrees, 12-37, about 3.5 minutes after the defendant collides with John O'Keefe, it's starting to go down, 72, 12-45, 66, 12-53, 61, and you see it drop and steady off at 1:36. Remember, cell phone battery under him. John O'Keefe either struggling for life or he's passed. And the blood's still warm either way under him. Doesn't move again until 6:06. It drops down 7 degrees because the women are pulling on him. The cold air is hitting the battery. What happens at 6:15? You're going to see the video. You've seen it, still photos. Kerry Roberts goes over, picks up the phone. Not only does she pick up the phone, she puts it in her pocket, and then 20 minutes later, the next meeting, the temperature rises. That's not convenient. That's not a coincidence. That's fact. That's data. And then the phone is passed, put in a warm environment, and it raises up. 6:15. How can someone conspire to pick up a phone on the side of the yard that was under Mr. O'Keefe's body at 6:15 and know the battery temperature was then going to rise? Not only did the battery temperature rise, when you look at the healthcare data, at 6:15 when she picks up the phone, you know what happens to the healthcare data, right? It starts to move. It's data. It's data. So, while they're going through this duress, the defendant asked Jen McCabe for yet another favor.
look up hypothermia. Find out how long it takes for someone to die in a cold. And there's Miss McCabe in her winter jacket, soccer mom, trying to help. She has MS, her hands aren't working, she's trying to type in what's happening during that time. It's a frantic scene. She tells you that the defendant then wants to run back to the ambulance, so she goes with her, never finishes or completes the input. And then she tries it again. At 6:23, at 6:24. That's what this woman did that night, that morning. Not only for her friend, for her! For her! That's what she did. And what happens to her after? Because the timestamp, when you open the timestamp, it's at the time it's open, and she's in bed at 2:27 looking up Hockomock Sports because she is so interested in the kids' sports, and that timestamp stays open. And she goes to that tab the next morning when she puts in how long to die in cold. And that is being portrayed that she's in a conspiracy. She gets vilified as a murderer, a soccer mom who came to help. It took Ian Whiffen 5 minutes to show you a live demonstration on how simple that works. That she's not deleting anything. Jessica Hyde told you it's automatic deletions over time. You usually can't delete that information. That's not a click and swipe like the good Dr. Wolf from Arca knows how to do. This can't be erased. But they still hold on to this. As they argue to you and all the injustices that have been done, they tell you, they want you to believe or take a flyer on the fact that she looked up how long to die in the cold at 2:27. It is an absolute contrary to the science. There's no basis to support it, but they stand here in front of you. Why? Because every time they say something like that, you look the other way. Don't look at her. Look the other way. 2:27, look the other way. Don't look at what she did. Former Trooper Proctor, look the other way. Don't look at her. Every time they make those eyes, oh, she got the glass from inside the Albert. Maybe in the basement. Look the other way. Don't look the other way. Look at the facts. Look at the data. And it all leads to one person. There's no grand conspiracy. It leads to one person, the defendant. And it's not just the data and facts. It's her herself. Let's talk about Mr. Proctor. You were invoked with this emotion early in the opening that this is a cancer. That's a tough word. Trying to evoke that primal reaction, disgust. I'm not saying you shouldn't be disgusted by the text messages. You should. You should. They're not defensible. I don't stand here and defend impropriety. I don't. But that doesn't change the physical evidence, the scientific evidence, and the data. He was terminated. He paid a penalty. He was held responsible for what he did. He should have been. He should have been. But that doesn't give a free pass. That doesn't change the facts. It doesn't change the physical evidence. It doesn't change the science. It's unfortunate. It's distasteful. It's dishonorable. Remember, Trooper Bukenik was asked, was the investigation with honor and integrity? And he said it was. Was Trooper Proctor's effort honor and integrity? And he said it was integrity. But he never said honor. That's a man of honor. Military service, dedicated to his country, highest level of clearances, to the President of the United States, now a state trooper. He would not say that Trooper Proctor was honorable. Because he wasn't. He wasn't. But that does not change. It doesn't create a conspiracy. Doesn't invent a dog. It doesn't make somebody in a house something they're not. It just doesn't. When you read those text messages, they're hard to look at. It's unfair. It's unfair. And if there was a penalty more than being fired, well, maybe that penalty would be deserved. But it has nothing to do with the justice in this case. It just doesn't. There's not one piece of evidence, not one, that we can look at and say, this was tampered with. This was planted. This was distorted. Remember when we introduced the taillights at the beginning? I didn't introduce three of the taillights, but then the defense did, so I put them in. Those were taillights that were only found by Trooper Proctor. I did not put that evidence in. Understanding those text messages and appreciating the disdain one might have for his comments, not that there was any evidence of tampering, not that there was any evidence that it was not true, but I didn't put that evidence before you because we didn't need Trooper Proctor in this case. We don't need Trooper Proctor to prove this case beyond a reasonable doubt. That's why I didn't introduce that evidence to you. Now, there's been a lot of talk about planting of taillight. We know the taillight wasn't planted because Trooper Buchanek and Mr. Proctor did not go down to Dighton to see Miss Reed until later in the afternoon. We know from the 507 video, we've seen that. We know the taillight was already missing when she's leaving the driveway. When the good Canton police detective went to do a wellness check to care for those young children, and they went to the house, inadvertently, they didn't even know it, the dash cam captured the back of the car. The taillight packed with snow is missing. It's already gone, it can't be planted. At this point, Trooper Proctor's still in his pajamas. He's not even on the case, he's not even on the scene. He's been near the car. And in the Dighton videos themselves, when you close it, you can take it at an angle and it moves, but if you get the right angle, you can see it's missing. It's gone. Can we have slide 18, please?
You can play any angle you want, but if you look at this angle, it's gone. There can be no plant. It's already gone. You know where it is? 34 Fairview Road, on at the Reed Field. January 29, 2022, 823. Look at the right-hand side. Look at the left-hand side. It's packed with snow. It's gone. It's gone. And the same thing when you do the videos, it's a different angle, a little smaller, but if you play that and watch the lights go up and down and slow it down, you'll see it expands.
It's gone. So when you have Dighton Officer Barrows come in here and try to tell you what he saw in the salad bar, couldn't have been it, you gotta ask yourself, what interest does he have coming in here in this case? A lot of attention on this case, a lot of people watching. Comes in after, of course, driving all the way out to the defense attorney's hotel to meet in a conference room so he can get a subpoena. He spends 2 hours driving up and back so that he can conveniently get a subpoena that tells him to appear, which he could have got by fax or in the mail. And so when he comes in, what he says is, that's absolutely not what I saw. Absolutely not. And then he claims that the last time he testified, he had made the same statement. I showed him his transcript. And did you see the redness creep over his face? He never said this before. In fact, he testified to the opposite. And so he sits on the stand with a new story after a meeting, we don't know why, but then I show him that bottom right photo with the snow, with it missing, and I say, is this the way it looked? That's of course before the snow melts out in the Sally Port so that you can see it unexposed. And he says, yes, he had to agree. This taillight was gone. There's no boogeyman, there's no plant, there's no Higgins at the Sally Port. There's no one tearing out pieces. In fact, remember I played you a clip and you'll have it where the defendant says, I was picking out pieces, it was crashed in, the bulb was showing, when I was showing Kerry and Jen, when they went back to Meadows. If you don't remember, listen to that clip, you'll hear it. Unfortunately, there's no ring video when they go back to Meadows. There's a ring video when she leaves, there's no ring video when she gets back. And so, now, when we're trying to look the other way, we want to find a dog bite. So enter Dr. Russell. Dr. Russell, according to her, nice woman, nice doctor, very accomplished. I respect that. She's the only dog expert in the world. The thing is, we know no idea what that expertise means. She volunteers for the job. She wants to be here. Looking on her profile, but she can't explain the methodology. What are you looking for in a dog bite? She can't tell us. It starts a year ago that it's claws, it's teeth, and then it's claws, then it's teeth, then it's I don't know. And then when you look at each of the different parts of the abrasions, she says, well, I can't tell if I look at each one of them, but all together it's a dog bite. It's a dog attack. That is the masterful expertise that the defense has bragged about bringing in. Dr. Russell telling you, because she says this is a dog bite. She has never been in a forensic situation where she's looked at a wound and identified it as a dog bite before. This is the first time, the only time she's ever done it. And what she says is these are not punctures. Punctures means it goes into the skin, a wound. There's no punctures. And she's sure, because she's an expert, so you should rely on her because she's coming in saying she's an expert and she's being presented. Yet, after saying there's no punctures, Dr. La Posada comes in, and she sees punctures everywhere. It's an animal attack. It's a dog.
Oh, is it? No method, no methodology, no history of this, no prior testimony that we know of other than arbitrarily what she says. And she says the exact opposite of Dr. Russell. Why is that? How does that happen? So obviously, there is no science to looking at an abrasion and saying where it came from. They give us no detail. They give us nothing that we should rely on. They contradict each other. It's just to get you to look the other way. And so we have now the issue of the defense has said over and over again, there's no collision. There's no collision. There's no collision. And they had a number of witnesses come in to try to say that. And they point to Dr. Scordibello, who works at the medical examiner's office. She tells you that she doesn't see injuries consistent with a collision. She's looking at this case for 90 days. 90 days. The evidence in this case did not stop. It continued for 2 years. She knows nothing about the data, nothing about the black box, nothing about the interviews of Ms. Reed. She doesn't know about the DNA. She doesn't know about the shards in the arm or in the clothes. Strike that, in the clothes. She knows nothing about that. So in 90 days, she didn't see any lower body injuries. She didn't see any lower extremity injuries, which are very common in car collisions. But that doesn't mean it didn't happen, because she, in 90 days, saw a fraction of the information. A fraction. And we know now, argument back and forth for days about lower body injuries, the suggestion is a car accident can affect everybody differently, depending on the angle, the scope, the speed. Some people can get plowed over by a car and have no injuries. Some people can get touched lightly and have more injuries. And there was the debate about no lower body injuries. Well, ARCA dispelled that in their dummy test, that you can have a collision with no lower body injuries. They did that for us. Thank you. And so the idea that at the time, in 90 days, that she doesn't have enough information to say consistent with a car accident doesn't mean there was no car accident. Let me talk a little bit about ARCA. I don't want to waste too much time with them. What expert who's supposed to come to you, they're not the arbiter of truth. Their opinions weigh no more than yours. Your common sense has more value than an expert's opinion. Their job is to assist you, to explain what their expertise is so that it's a tool for you so that you can make a decision. That's objectivity. We've heard words like confirmation bias, objectivity. Mr. Wolf got on the stand, and before we even started, you have to ask yourself, what expert has a court order for text messages and then deletes the text messages? What expert, what objective expert uses signal, an encrypted app, to communicate about the case? Never used it before, hasn't used it since. And so when he did his tests, he used a lower weight arm. Wasn't trying to bash him, wasn't trying to insult him, tried to get him just to recognize that a 9.38 pound arm is less weight than John O'Keefe's metric, which would be 11.8. That's all, and because it's a lighter arm, it takes more speed to create the same damage. I don't know science, I don't know math very well, but that's basic. It's basic, and he fought me over and over again. Did he seem objective that he was trying to help you? Because Dr. Renshaw came in the next day and said, well, you have to adjust for that. That's all I asked him for an hour, about adjusting, just like Judge Welcher adjusted. Do you adjust it? And he tried to talk to me like I was making something up. His own colleague had to admit it. Now, it's funny, he admitted it before he got through his credentials. No sequestration order violations. Nobody was coaching him, but he knew enough to come in at the beginning and get right on that point. And speaking of sequestration, remember Dr. Russell on her limo ride over? If Brendan asks you a question, make sure you ask for a transcript. Impede the progress. Slow down the questioning. Interfere. Sequestration order is of this fundamental fairness for all witnesses, not just some. And so what happens with Dr. Renshaw, we don't know. But we do know he comes in here and he tells you that he was not getting information that was helping him the last time he testified. He insisted. I asked him 5 times, was he getting information that would help him in his testimony? Not from the defense, from his former employer. He said, no, And at the end of the examination, he reads his transcript, and it's yes, yes, yes. And he tells us that he's independent and objective. I asked him about a luncheon, not a big deal, just ask him about it. And he says, I have a sandwich and I stand in the corner until I remind him that we got video footage from a documentarian and he's in one of the scenes. And then things change. So when you talk about objectivity and who to trust, they can come in and say, Judd Welcher said this and that, it doesn't make it so. Judd Welcher, Dr. Welcher, never in any report, in any presentation, in any testimony to you, ever suggested this is how it happened. This was how his arm was. This is how his feet was. He was trying to show whether or not the orientation, could this happen with the angle, with the height? That's all that test was. It was no more. But what they do is they reposture it, repackage it, and say it means this when it doesn't, and we're going to show you why it's not that, therefore we win. That's all that is. It's semantics. Judd Welcher, Dr. Welcher, never suggested that. And his work on text stream data, unassailable. And so what we have, inevitably, is we have a timeline that never moves, data that never changes, physical evidence that can't be put in that spot without a collision. We have, inevitably, proof. Without any doubt, that on January 29, 2022, Ms. Reed was with Mr. O'Keefe and she got drunk. She drank. She was 2 to 3 times over the legal limit. And they went to a party, an after party, and they were fighting. They were fighting. It was a relationship in decline. And he got out of the car and he had a brief window of life left. And when he got out and she drove away, she couldn't let it go. She got drunk, she hit him, she left him to die. It's that simple. We don't know exactly how this collision happened, but we have a good idea from the physical evidence, and we know that it happened. Can someone have a collision without lower body injuries? Could I have slide 19, please? You bet they can. We don't know if this is the body position. We don't know if this is the exact speed, but what it tells us, this is viable. Look at the debris field. Look at his turn. Remember his sneaker on that curb that got lodged against the sneaker? Mr. O'Keefe then falls back, hits his head, counter coup, left to die. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, there is no doubt what happened that night. There is no doubt who did it. You have a very difficult task ahead of you when you consider the evidence and you consider the law. Very difficult. There are 3 charges. There is second degree murder. Ms. Reed, when she chose to drive back at Mr. O'Keefe in that night with a 6,000 pound Lexus, in that anger, 75%, whether she meant to hit him or not, didn't mean to kill him, she hit him. Strengths, it is a plain and strong likelihood of death. You would never get back down your driveway if your kids were at the end of the driveway. You'd say, well, you're gonna kill somebody? You would never do it because you would expect, if you drove at them at that speed, that someone would die. That's secondary murder. OUI manslaughter, she's drunk, she was reckless. She doesn't even have to know she hit him. She doesn't even have to know she hit him. But she did. She did, and she left a man who was kind and generous and thoughtful. She left him alone. She left him alone to die. Could I have slide 22, please? He is not an it. John O'Keefe is not a body. John O'Keefe is not a buffalo on a prairie. John O'Keefe was a person, and he was murdered by Karen Reed.
Take that, thank you. All right, jurors, the next step is my instructions to you on the law. I'm not going to do that right now. You've been sitting for a long time. So I do have to tell you, even though you've just heard the closing argument, you cannot discuss this case even with each other. All right? So we'll send you back for lunch. It's going to be a shorter lunch. My instructions are long. And we want you to be able to get this case to start deliberations today. So I'm going to send you back maybe about a half an hour. Is that enough time for you folks? All right, so we'll give you a half an hour for lunch, and then we'll come back. I'll give you my instructions on the law, and then the jurors will go out to deliberate. I know there are 18 of you. We seat only 12 deliberating jurors, so 6 of you are going to be alternates. I can just tell you that. You know the odds, right? And I can tell you it's Mr. McDermott's least favorite part of his job is smoking. So we'll do that this afternoon. Do not discuss this case. We'll see you in about a half an hour. Okay. Counsel, can I see you just a second? Tori, we're done.
You are muted. You are unmuted.
What are they doing? What is now only me see?
So who wanted to see me? I'll see you at sidebar for just a minute. No, Chris. Yes. Yes. I'm sorry. Some space here, please. Okay, Paul.
Surprise to the jury.
All right, jurors, I'm going to give you the instructions now in the law. But first, I want to thank you for serving on this jury and for being so attentive. You'll soon deliberate for the purpose of reaching a verdict. But before you do that, it's my responsibility to give you the instructions concerning the law. These instructions are divided into 3 parts. The first part, general instructions that are provided in every criminal case. The second part, specific instructions concerning the crimes alleged in this case. And third, guidelines for your deliberations. Please listen carefully to all of the instructions. Do not ignore any instruction or give any special attention to any other instruction. To make sure that I give you the instructions accurately, I will read them to you. You'll also get a written copy so that you may refer to it in the jury room during deliberations.
I will try to make sure that my oral instructions match the written instructions. If there is any difference between what I say aloud and what the written instructions say, please follow what I say aloud. You must take the law as I give it to you. You may not quarrel with it. You can't do that regardless of any opinion you may have as to what you think the law ought to be. Lawyers or witnesses may suggest something about the law. That's not necessarily the law. That's because it's my responsibility of as the judge and mine alone to instruct you what the law is. I'll now turn to part one of these instructions, which are general instructions that apply to all criminal cases. As I've explained to you at the beginning of the trial, there is a fundamental rule that applies to all criminal cases, including this case. Every person who is accused of a crime is presumed to be innocent of that crime. Ms. Reed is presumed innocent of the charges in this case. That means you must consider Ms. Reed to be innocent unless the prosecution has proved beyond a reasonable doubt through evidence presented at this trial that Ms. Reed committed the crimes charged. I'll explain what I mean by reasonable doubt in a moment. Ms. Reed does not have to do anything to convince you that she is innocent. She does not have to explain anything. She does not have to testify, call, or question witnesses, or provide any evidence at all, because you must presume she is innocent. Instead, it is up to the Commonwealth to prove the charges against Ms. Reed beyond a reasonable doubt. This burden of proof never shifts to the defendant. After you have considered all the evidence carefully and fairly, if you have a reasonable doubt about Ms. Reed's guilt in a particular charge, then your verdict must be not guilty on that charge. You may find Ms. Reed guilty of a charge only if all 12 deliberating jurors agree that the Commonwealth has proved the charge beyond a reasonable doubt. Now, what is proof beyond a reasonable doubt? The term is often used and probably pretty well understood, though it is not easily defined. Proof beyond a reasonable doubt does not mean proof beyond all possible doubt, for everything in the lives of human beings is open to some possible or imaginary doubt. A charge is proved beyond a reasonable doubt if, after you have compared and considered all of the evidence, you have in your minds an abiding conviction to a moral certainty that the charge is true. When we refer to moral certainty, we mean the highest degree of certainty possible in matters relating to human affairs, based solely on the evidence that has been put before you in this case. I have told you that every person is presumed to be innocent unless and until he or she is proved guilty, and that the burden of proof is on the Commonwealth. If you evaluate all the evidence and you still have a reasonable doubt remaining, the defendant is entitled to the benefit of that doubt and must be acquitted. It is not enough for the Commonwealth to establish a probability, even a strong probability, that the defendant is more likely to be guilty than not guilty. That is not enough. Instead, the evidence must convince you of the defendant's guilt to a reasonable and moral certainty, a certainty that convinces your understanding and satisfies your reason and judgment as jurors who are sworn to act conscientiously on the evidence. This is what we mean by proof beyond a reasonable doubt. How do you decide whether the Commonwealth has proven that each element of an indictment is true beyond a reasonable doubt? Let's talk about the roles we all have. First, the function of the jury. You are the most important people in this room. It all begins and ends with your function. You will determine the facts in this case, and that is your job and yours alone. You are the sole and exclusive judges of the facts. If there are any conflicts in the testimony, it is your job to resolve those conflicts if you can do so. Once you determine the facts, it is your duty to apply those facts to the law as I explain it to you and to determine whether the Commonwealth has proven its case beyond a reasonable doubt. You must decide the facts solely and entirely on the evidence as you have seen, heard in this courtroom and on nothing else. No prejudice, no bias, no fear, no favor. You must not be swayed by personal likes or dislikes. Your deliberations are no place for emotion, sympathy, passion, or prejudice. The Commonwealth and Karen Reed have a right to have the case judged by fair and impartial jurors. All parties who come before the court stand as equals before you. Therefore, your verdicts must be based on the law as I'm giving it to you, and on the evidence and the facts that you find, and nothing else. You cannot allow yourselves to be influenced by any personal feelings you may have about the nature of the crimes with which Ms. Reed has been charged or the consequences of your verdict. Just the cool, reflective, and impartial sifting of the evidence so that here in this courtroom, justice may be done. Your focus is on the evidence. I am the judge of the law. My job is to teach you the law that you must follow in the case. However, I have no opinion about how you should decide this case. You should not consider anything I have said or done during this trial as reflecting any opinion by me about how you should decide this case. If you believe I have an opinion about the facts of this case, you must disregard it. You must decide this case based solely on your evaluation of the evidence. The arguments of the lawyers are not evidence. They are not witnesses. If a lawyer during argument made a mistake in summarizing the evidence or argued something not supported by the evidence, you must disregard it. It is the jury's collective memory of the evidence that controls the matter. Lawyers' objections are a proper part of the court procedure and are not part of the evidence. So don't hold it against the lawyers or their client if they made objections, motions, or other requests. They're simply doing their job during the trial. There was testimony at trial that the lawyers interviewed witnesses when preparing for the trial. You may not draw any unfavorable inferences solely from that fact. There is nothing improper about conducting such interviews. On the contrary, the lawyers are obliged to prepare their case as thoroughly as possible and may interview witnesses. The verdict must be based only on the evidence and the jury's collective reasoning applied to the evidence in a fair and impartial manner. The extent to which you believe or disbelieve a witness or what an exhibit purports to show and the importance to give any testimony or other evidence is entirely up to your own good judgment. The evidence consists of the testimony of the witnesses and the exhibits that were introduced in this trial. You will have those exhibits with you in the deliberation room. In addition, as you heard during the trial, the prosecution and defendant agreed that certain things are true. Therefore, you must accept those things as true. There are some things you have heard about that have not been introduced into evidence, such as previous testimony of witnesses, police reports, autopsy and accident reconstruction reports, and perhaps other reports. You may naturally wonder why neither side has introduced any of them into evidence. The answer is that under our rules of evidence, such reports usually may not be admitted, although the parties may refer to them for certain limited purposes while questioning witnesses. So you should not hold it against any party that you do not have them, and neither should you speculate on what they may or may not contain. Similarly, as you review the exhibits, you may find that some information has been removed because it is not relevant. Please ignore that and don't try to guess what may have been removed from there. Any information that you may have read, heard, or seen about the case outside of the courtroom is not evidence. My instructions to you and any other comments I made, the lawyer's opening and closing statements and any comments they made, are not evidence. If the lawyers or I made any comments during the trial, those comments are not evidence and you must base your verdict only upon the evidence. In an interaction between a lawyer and a witness, you may consider only the witness's testimony as evidence. Answers that I struck from the record and told you to disregard are not evidence. Only the testimony of the witness, that is, their answers to the questions and the exhibits are evidence. Finally, on this topic, if one of the lawyers or I refer to some part of the evidence and that does not coincide with your own recollection, it is your collective recollection which you are to follow in your deliberations. It is important to remind you folks that the verdict cannot be based on emotional reaction or sympathy for any person or side of this case. Certain of the testimony and exhibits may have provoked an emotional reaction in all of us. You may feel sympathy for the family of Mr. O'Keefe, and you may feel sympathy for the defendant as she sits here in the courtroom. But your job is to decide the case without bias, fear, sympathy, or favor, to view the evidence with a certain clinical detachment, and to decide the case based solely on the evidence and the application of the law. I have allowed you folks to take notes during the trial if you chose, and you may refer to those notes during your deliberations. But remember, they are not evidence or a substitute for the evidence and your recollection. They are for your personal use. Please do not share them with the other jurors. Please consider the evidence as a whole. Do not make up your mind about what the verdict should be until after you've gone to the jury room to decide the case and you and your fellow jurors have discussed the evidence. Keep an open mind until then. For each indictment, you must decide whether the Commonwealth has proved beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant is guilty of that specific charge. Your decision as to each charge must be unanimous, meaning that all 12 deliberating jurors must agree. You will receive one verdict slip for each indictment. When all 12 jurors agree on the verdict for a particular indictment, the foreperson should check off that verdict and then sign and date the slip in ink. For each charge, if you all agree that the Commonwealth has proved every element of the charge beyond a reasonable doubt, then you should find Ms. Reed guilty of that charge. On the other hand, if you all agree that the Commonwealth did not prove one or more elements of a particular charge beyond a reasonable doubt, then your verdict must be not guilty on that charge. You'll remember that we took a view in this case. It seems like a very long time ago, but we took a view in this case. The purpose of the view was to help you better understand the evidence that you heard during the trial and to help you appreciate the locations and their surroundings. Your responsibility in the view was to see the places, observe them carefully, and remember what you saw. The view is part of this case. You may use and consider the observations that you made while on the view in your deliberations in reaching a verdict. The same is true about the demonstration we saw from the witness stand. The demonstration was done simply to help you understand the evidence, and you may consider it in your deliberations. It is the jury's job to earnestly seek the truth of the matter. In doing that, the jury must decide questions of credibility and reliability. The jury must decide how truthful or reliable or convincing any part of the evidence is. You should evaluate the testimony of a police officer in the same way you would evaluate anyone else's testimony. You must not automatically believe or disbelieve a witness just because the person is a police officer. In deciding questions of credibility and reliability, you may rely on your common sense and reasoning powers and your life experiences. Consider a witness's testimony in the context of all the other evidence, not in isolation. You may consider the demeanor, candor, and appearance of the witness in testifying. Who was the witness? What relationship did they have to the case, to the other witnesses or parties? Did the witness have any bias, reason, or motive to give false or shaded testimony? If so, you may consider that bias or motive in your deliberations and ultimately as to whether or not it impacts the credibility of the witnesses and the assessment of the evidence presented. Is the witness someone likely to give an honest and impartial account? Consider not just whether the witness was honest, but also whether the witness's testimony was accurate and reliable or honestly mistaken. A prior statement by a witness, if inconsistent with his or her trial testimony in any way, may be considered on the witness's credibility and reliability, and only for this purpose. Also, if there has been a suggestion that a witness recently contrived their testimony, you may take into account any earlier statement the witness made which was consistent with their present testimony. The prior statement is relevant only as to the witness's credibility and reliability, and only for this purpose. You have heard some evidence suggesting that the Commonwealth did not conduct certain scientific tests or otherwise follow standard procedure during the police investigation. This is a factor you may consider in evaluating the evidence presented in this case. With respect to this factor, you should consider three questions. First, whether the omitted test or other actions were standard procedure or steps that would otherwise normally be taken under the circumstances. Second, whether the omitted tests or actions could reasonably have been expected to lead to significant evidence of the defendant's guilt or innocence. And third, whether the evidence provides a reasonable and adequate explanation for the omission of the tests or other actions. If you find that any omissions in the investigation were significant and not adequately explained, you may consider whether the omissions tend to affect the quality, reliability, or credibility of the evidence presented by the Commonwealth. All of these considerations involved factual determinations that are entirely up to you. And you are free to give this matter whatever weight, if any, you deem appropriate based on all the circumstances. During the trial, I gave you some instructions on how you were to consider some of the evidence you heard, and importantly, how you are not to consider the evidence. I'm going to summarize those limiting instructions here. Ms. Reed is not charged with committing any crime other than the charges contained in the indictments. You've heard evidence about interactions that Ms. Reed may have had with Mr. O'Keefe in Aruba and others in Aruba. The evidence was admitted solely for your consideration as evidence of the nature of the defendant's relationship with Mr. O'Keefe and whether it goes to her knowledge or intent or motive on January 29, 2022. You may not consider the evidence as proof that she has a criminal personality or bad character. You may not take the defendant's prior acts as a substitute for proof that the defendant committed the crimes charged here or to conclude that if she committed the acts in Aruba, she must have committed the offenses with which she is charged here. You can only use the evidence for the limited purpose of how it goes to the defendant's state of mind, motive, and the nature of her relationship with John O'Keefe. Before you consider any electronic communication in your deliberations, you must first find that it is more likely true than not that the persons who authored the electronic communications were, in fact, John O'Keefe, Ms. Reed, Michael Proctor, Brian Higgins, or others alleged to have authored or created them. If you do not find it is more likely true than not that the persons alleged to have authored or transmitted or created the communications were the persons alleged to have done so, then you may not consider the electronic communication in deciding the case.
There's more live courtroom coverage coming up. Press subscribe now so you don't miss a second from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Lots of places can accidentally expose you to identity theft. Doctor's offices, online retailers, insurance companies, the list goes on. Thankfully, LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. LifeLock keeps an eye on your personal information, credit applications, finances, and more. And if they find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, they alert you right away. All through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Even better, alerts are automatically activated the moment you become a LifeLock member. No extra work on your part. Get the alerts that could make all the difference. Don't wait. Join LifeLock now. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart and save up to 30% your first year. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart for 30% off. Terms apply.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At ChumbaCasino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Lots of places can accidentally expose you to identity theft. Doctor's offices, online retailers, insurance companies. The list goes on. Thankfully, LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. LifeLock keeps an eye on your personal information, credit applications, finances, and more. And if they find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, they alert you right away. All through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Even better, alerts are automatically activated the moment you become a LifeLock member. No extra work on your part. Get the alerts that could make all the difference. Don't wait. Join LifeLock now. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart and save up to 30% your first year. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart for 30% off. Terms apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Lots of places can accidentally expose you to identity theft. Doctor's offices, online retailers, insurance companies. The list goes on. Thankfully, LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. LifeLock keeps an eye on your personal information, credit applications, finances, and more. And if they find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, they alert you right away. All through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Even better, alerts are automatically activated the moment you become a LifeLock member. No extra work on your part. Get the alerts that could make all the difference. Don't wait. Join LifeLock now. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart and save up to 30% your first year. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart for 30% off. Terms apply.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply.
Lots of places can accidentally expose you to identity theft. Doctor's offices, online retailers, insurance companies. The list goes on. Thankfully, LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. LifeLock keeps an eye on your personal information, credit applications, finances, and more. And if they find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, they alert you right away. All through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Even better, alerts are automatically activated the moment you become a LifeLock member. No extra work on your part. Get the alerts that could make all the difference. Don't wait. Join LifeLock now. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart and save up to 30% your first year. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart for 30% off. Terms apply.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Lots of places can accidentally expose you to identity theft. Doctor's offices, online retailers, insurance companies. The list goes on. Thankfully, LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. LifeLock keeps an eye on your personal information, credit applications, finances, and more. And if they find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, they alert you right away. All through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Even better, alerts are automatically activated the moment you become a LifeLock member. No extra work on your part. Get the alerts that could make all the difference. Don't wait. Join LifeLock now. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart and save up to 30% your first year. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart for 30% off. Terms apply.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus terms and conditions apply.
Lots of places can accidentally expose you to identity theft. Doctor's offices, online retailers, insurance companies, the list goes on. Thankfully, LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. LifeLock keeps an eye on your personal information, credit applications, finances, and more. And if they find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, they alert you right away. All through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Even better, alerts are automatically activated the moment you become a LifeLock member. No extra work on your part. Get the alerts that could make all the difference. Don't wait. Join LifeLock now. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart and save up to 30% your first year. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart for 30% off. Terms apply.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Lots of places can expose you to identity theft. That's why LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. If we find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, we alert you right away, all through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Save up to 30% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.